you see people having photos of their children in intensive care. And I remember distinctly thinking, will I take a photo? No, I'm not taking a photo because this is not going to be the last photo of Fiona. And yet, in hindsight, for awareness raising, it would have been a really good picture to have.
At the time, you weren't like, oh, this will be perfect for raising awareness. No.
Our meningitis story started on the 4th of October 2011. It was a normal Tuesday morning. In hindsight, the only indicator at that stage was Fiona made reference to it being Wednesday, and I said, it's Tuesday.
We went and sat in a classroom up until the first bell, and I used my bag as a pillow and went to sleep on the desk.
Which is not what you normally did when you went into school in the morning.
No, it wasn't. An hour and a half later, things really started to kick off. And I was sitting in class and I got pins and needles in my feet. The pins and needles started in my feet and then they moved up my legs. And it was literally, it stopped exactly at my waist. And from the waist down, I was just numb. But that tingly feeling. I remember sitting there and thinking, gosh, it's 10:05, breaks at 10:15. And if the bell goes in 10 minutes, I try and stand up right now, I'll fall over because I have no feeling from the waist down. But then it passed. And then the same feeling went up my spine and over the top and round my skull. And then that went away. And then the bell rang and I went out for break. And as I went out for break, the same feeling went into my hands and my fingers curled in almost into fists, but claws essentially. But it went away again. It was all minutes at a time. And so I then headed over to my singing lesson. And I was stood outside at my singing lesson. My singing teacher opened the door and I went to say hello and it suddenly hit my mouth and I couldn't speak. It must have just been a mumble, literally, because I had no control anymore over my mouth. And so she instantly was like, this is a problem. It must have looked like I was having a stroke because my face just had slumped. And so she then marched me over to Matron's office. By the time we got there, that had stopped as well. So I explained to Matron everything that had happened over the course of that morning. And I could hear myself putting extra words in sentences or extra syllables in words. It was the weirdest thing. So she would say, okay, just say it again, you know, do it until you get it right. And I could do it, but it took two or three attempts to say the sentence without extra words in it, which was just, it was weird. Yeah, at that point, I felt very aware that there was a problem. I wasn't sat there going, this is a concern. I was like, this is weird. So I wasn't worried at that point. It was just an odd experience.
I was working in a school and they came and got me. It was break time. They said, Fiona's school's on the phone. Matron said to me, oh, Fiona's not feeling very well, but it looks a bit like she's got a migraine, which you've had in the past. But she said, I think I'd quite like you just to come and get her and take her up and see the GP. I don't know what made me say it, but as I hung up the phone, I just said, if anything changes, will you dial 999 first? Got halfway there and my mobile phone went off and I answered it and Matron said, I've dialed 999. I think you'll probably get here about the same time as the ambulance. Went into autopilot and drove the rest of the way and was met at the front door of the school and ushered along the corridors to Matron's office. Fiona walked out the room and went, I'm okay now. Mum went to give me a hug and threw up over my shoulder.
Yep.
The paramedics literally came in on the back of that. And they asked you what your name was and you said Fiona. And then they said, what's your surname? And you just looked blank and you looked at me and went, Mum, what's my surname? At that point, I knew something was very amiss. They took us to the hospital. We didn't have to do a blue light at that point, although you were like a wild animal at times in the ambulance, trying to escape and get out the ambulance. By the time we got to the hospital, you were very, very, very agitated, and I think you'd been sick a couple of times. They were still going down the stroke route, although they did ask me, could she have taken drugs? And I was thinking, 10:30 on a school morning. I think it's unlikely, but I went right through your school bag because they told me to. And the only drugs I found were the antibiotics for your tooth abscess, which was quite a relief. Wanted to get you started on antibiotics and antivirals because it was clearly in their mind that they needed to treat for everything while they worked out what was going on. You needed a cannula in your hand. You were just flailing around And it took 7 adults to hold you on that bed while they got the cannula in, which then allowed them to put you into an induced coma because they wanted to do a lumbar puncture. And there was no way on earth you would have let them do a lumbar puncture on you. We were ushered into a room with sofas and tissues on the table. And it's only really realised very recently how significant that might have been. And thankfully, it wasn't as awful as some people have had. They came and spoke to us and said that you were now in an induced coma and they were treating you for bacterial and viral infections and that you were being taken up to ICU. I think that was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You'd been dropped at school at 8:30. By 1:30, you were in a coma. And by 4 o'clock, you were up in ICU. I do remember sitting, looking at you and just thinking, if you even waken up, will you be still 15 years old or will you be a 6-year-old in terms of what you can do, or a baby, and, you know, restarting from scratch and finding that very scary. But at the same time, the only thing that mattered was for you to be alive. And they then felt that you needed to take you out of the coma to allow your body to heat up again, and they would see how you were.
Yeah, I remember waking up and not actively breathing because I was still fully intubated. There's a level of external feeling of breathing at all times when it's happening internally, but you're not doing. That was weird. That was a really weird moment.
You said, "Where am I?" And I said, "You're in intensive care at the Royal," to which you said, "But that's where people come to die." And I just knew at that point that when you said that you weren't going to die, because you were clearly better than you had been. And somehow you'd managed to turn that corner in those 12 hours.
And at that point, I felt okay. But you know, the person next to me was someone who'd had a liver transplant and hadn't woken up since the operation. You know, it was scary, scary.
It was intense.
End of life stuff.
They still didn't know what it was. They knew it wasn't viral by that stage. They'd ruled that out. You were moved to the neurology department, which was in another hospital, into infectious diseases, individual room, double doored, and it was very intense. And we still didn't know what it was. There was talk of meningitis, there was talk of encephalitis, but the results weren't coming back quickly. You'd had antibiotics for a week and you were clinically pretty well. And they said, well, you can go home and take oral antibiotics for the second week. Oh, and by the way, the test results have come back and it's bacterial meningitis from your tooth abscess. So we got discharged, and I mean, you were well, but you were so far from not well. But you were in an incredibly important year school-wise. And so we just batted you back to school, didn't we? When the term went back, Fiona went back to school. I remember you coming in and falling asleep when you came in.
I used to go to matron's office and sleep from 10:30 to 11:30 most days. I'd quite often be given a hot chocolate. I was treated very well. Oh, I had no short-term memory. I used to have to look up my school timetable every day. Usually after a couple of weeks of any given school year, you're pretty confident mm-hmm. that you know what classes you have on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't. I really... Mm-hmm. had no clue.
But they didn't tell me this until 6 months later, which in some ways I'm glad, because I would have probably felt she shouldn't be at school. We were heading towards the first anniversary of you having had meningitis, and you decided you were going to do some fundraising.
Yeah, so we did a concert, we did a run, we did a 10K. Was it 10K? Did I run 10? Wow, good for me. There was a raffle and there was a concert. It was all just kind of in 1 week, but there were various little bits and pieces.
The support from school and your friends and other parents was just phenomenal, and we raised a huge amount of money at that time.
I think it was just over £2,000.
Which was just incredible. did a fair amount of fundraising to start off with, but you do get to the stage where you can't ask the same people all the time to be putting their hands in their pockets. So I started doing a bit of volunteering and a bit of awareness raising of meningitis. Because I was a speech therapist and me and my colleagues all worked out of health centres, meant that we could target health centres and waiting rooms to get symptom cards out there. And then the charity asked me to do some awareness stands at universities.
Whereas I did a couple of things where I was going into schools and talking there. I did the parliamentary reception. I've been for dinner at the House of Lords. That was different.
And then 3 years ago, it was my big birthday. I had a big birthday. And in Scotland, they have the Kilt Walk, which is walking a marathon length. The Kilt Walk was on my actual birthday. And it just felt like it was calling to me to be a potential fundraiser. We decided that it would be lovely if we could get 50 people to do it on my significant birthday. And actually, on the day, we had 60.
I was going to say 63
of us did the Kilt Walk. And Tom, the CEO, and Steve, our founder, both travelled up along with other members of staff and did the Kilt Walk with us. On that occasion, I think we raised over £17,000. It was a huge amount of money.
I did no training. It was a very bad idea.
It was a very bad idea. I did lots and lots of training and it was still hard. There was information came out that there was going to be a community support officer role for Scotland, which there hadn't been for a couple of years. It was full time covering Scotland and Northern Ireland. While I've had the children, only ever worked part time. And suddenly it was just at a stage where I only had one child left at home and I had the opportunity that if I wanted to, I could work full time again.
Well, and have a complete career change.
Yes, I'd done
the same job for
29 years as a speech and language therapist. But this was just shouting at me and I thought I would apply and yeah, I got the job. February of 2019, I started at Meningitis Now and had a great first year and travelled over to Northern Ireland. I think it was 5 times in the year, started to support families in both countries. I'm still there, having had a period of not working, thank you to the pandemic, but still very much there and supporting families. And while we've been doing that, you've been part of the Believe and Achieve programme.
Yeah, and training to be a peer mentor and then mentoring a couple of people. Although technically I'm now at the upper age limit of the programme.
But I don't think your time with Meningitis Now is coming to an end because of that.
Not at all. It's now been... How many years has it been? It's been 8 years of various work with the charity since I became a young ambassador.
So I guess what we can say is meningitis changed our family's life initially in a very scary way, but in the long term, it's given me a completely different career path, which I really enjoy. And yeah, we've just got a different way of looking at life now, I think, than we did 10 years ago.
Yeah, my outlook's completely different. And I think also I'm quite a different person than I would have been otherwise. There's been lots of ups and downs, but very, very lucky.
Mm-hmm. Incredibly lucky.